Welcome to Business Insights with John Racine. This is an extra special episode this week. It's part one out of a two-part series conversation with local business owner Oliver Steins. Oliver Steins is the owner of Ganoresca Art and Framing, located in downtown Porto. Ganoresca Art and Framing is a store in which you can bring your own art in, your own photographs in, and get somebody to really help craft that into a special piece where it can ultimately really bring out the value in a piece of art or a photograph. Also, he has an exceptional ability to take old photos or personal photos and enhance them, make them really stand out. The repository of art, local art, is extensive, and he can certainly really put a personal twist onto really anything that you think is going to bring joy to your home or business. So this conversation is the conversation that is really leading up into really what really made Oliver who he is today. It's kind of his journey through his youth and his journey in where he was living. He made several different moves and ultimately ended up in our community, had a family, and made the decision to open up this business about 11 years ago. And it's a great conversation. Part one, we're going to be leading up to that moment. And then next week, we talk in detail about the business, what he's learned in his journey. And ultimately, we talk about a very sensitive subject, the subject of Oliver being recently told that he has a form of ALS and how he's really managing this news, the ultimate support that the community has given him, and how he's keeping his business moving. He's able to keep the business moving because his eldest daughter is in there making sure that the same quality and craftsmanship that he has promised his customers year in, year out, is going to continue. And that is the promise that he wants to make sure everybody ultimately understands and knows, because he wants this business to continue to grow. So, without further ado, my part one conversation with Oliver Steins. Welcome to Business Insights. I would like to thank you for tuning in. There's a lot of content out there, so you spending this hour with us means a great deal. This show is my opportunity to share the entrepreneurial success stories of our local business owners, and I encourage you to join me each week as we profile a new member of our business community. My guest today in studio is Oliver Steins. Oliver owns a shop downtown Port Hope. It's called Ganoresca Art and Framing. I just want to ask you, Oliver, where are you from? Where were you born?
Originally from Toronto, born in Toronto, but quickly at the age of 1 year old, my father is an artist, and he got a job with CBC Radio, actually, in Halifax. So we moved, I consider Halifax where I really grew up instead of Toronto. We went to Halifax and went to public school there until about age of eight years old. And then my father got a job in Ottawa. So from Halifax to Ottawa, and where he worked at the as an illustrator for the Ontario Science Farm. And then from Ottawa, we were there for my public school days. And then we ended up back in Toronto, in North York. And that's where I went to junior high and part of high school. And I didn't finish high school. I went off to other things, an alternative independence school, what they call a free school. Right. So I never completed high school. I didn't fit in that. I couldn't conform to sitting there and under a time constraint and taking in lessons. So
I think for all of those who are joining us today, you'll know Oliver Stein by appearance because of the mustache.
The mustache.
It's very much a throwback to a 1910 baseball player kind of era. Yeah. But you have this kind of artistic background in the family. Your father, as you said, was as an illustrator. Mm-hmm. You were moving around growing up. Tell us just a little bit about, you know, what that was like, being moving around and being able to observe kind of maybe a little bit about what your father was doing.
Yeah, it was, in retrospect, it wasn't that great moving around because I never got to establish really, long-term friendships. Mm-hmm. And my parents were very, the immigrants from Latvia, from the Baltic states. And my dad studied art in Europe, and was a graduate from Lübeck, Germany, as well as the Latvian Academy of Art. And he went to OCAD back in the 50s. But in any event, with my Bohemian parents, very artistic, both of them. The living with them was kind of interesting because I never got to associate. I was always dragged along to art exhibits, so I lived off of whatever hors d'oeuvres were there, and I hung around mostly with nobody of my own age, actually.
Right.
So a lot of older people, but we traveled quite a bit. We would go to shows, and my father would have his own exhibits, and we're all constantly in the newspaper as well, because
right.
My dad was an accomplished artist over and above his what he did for to pay the rent,
right,
was to become an illustrator. But he was well known as his own artist. He surrealism and paintings and all kinds of mediums. So so that's basically that was the way I grew up. But moving was kind of challenging, because for a young person, I didn't really establish any real friendships. But having said that, I got exposed to a lot of interesting things that I wouldn't normally, a normal child would get.
Absolutely.
And I also had an older brother who's 9 years older, and he was a musician.
Okay.
And now he is an artist as well. He followed my father's footsteps.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as you say, obviously the moving around wasn't giving you kind of the typical stability of
building
long-term friendships with people. But being exposed to, at a young age to that level of artistic creativity, as well as what really kind of builds up people's passion,
mm-hmm.
Could give you a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, because I didn't know anything different, compared to my other friends. I'd come home and and my dad had a studio, obviously, in the house, and it was almost comforting to smell the essence of turpentine,
right.
and the paint, and it was always, and we were always very poor. Like, we never had any money. It's like the phrase "a starving artist" is true. His illustrations, doing illustrative work, was again the bread and butter. But at home was very a lot of fun, because dad would come home and he'd toss me some plasticine or something, or something he got from work. He'd bring home materials and paints, and when we wanted to, my brother and I wanted we were always creating something, making something. It's not like today where you can go out, and we didn't have any electronic devices, obviously, back in the 50s or 60s rather. So my brother and I had great imaginations, and we would create things, and we go to dad. I said, Dad, I want a pair of sunglasses, and he'd get some mat board, cut it up into a frame and put some gelatin in, gelatin like you know, red or blue, mm-hmm. you know, plastic, and throw it in there and create something, right? Or just give you some paints and charcoal or whatever, and go sit at a table and create things, right? So that was the norm.
Very interesting upbringing. Yeah. And just to bring it back even a little bit further, of course, your parents were born and grew up in Latvia. Yeah,
my dad was from Riga. He came from a fairly well-to-do family. His my grandfather had one of the largest inns in Riga. Imagine a property at Young and Bloor, basically.
Right.
And my mom was a farm girl. Uh-huh. But they met here. They didn't meet in, like a lot of immigrants, Latvians are a very small community. There's only, even today, there's only maybe 2 million, and half of them are Russian in Latvia itself. Uh-huh. So we know everybody. We won't go to the same church, the same summer camp.
Yes.
So even with my wife, she's Latvian. Uh-huh. And we're the same age. We were brought into the world by the same doctor even.
Interesting.
Yeah, so exactly three months apart, and so we know the same cultural background. We grew up with that. We went to Latvian school on Saturday or on the weekend, mm-hmm. and we go to summer camp in the summer months.
Right.
So you get to know everybody that way.
So we're just going to take a quick break and come back with local business owner Oliver Steins. Welcome back to Business Insights with John Racine, my guest, Oliver Stein. So as you said, you're kind of get a few years into high school, and mm-hmm. then you move to an alternative education.
Well, yeah.
What really sparked that moment? I know that you kind of alluded to the idea that you weren't able to or didn't find comfort in conforming to the normal structure.
Yeah, a kid like myself back then, today, would they probably give you a pill or something like that, or would label it with, you know, a learning disability of some sort, or, you know. But I was too interested in what was going on in the outside world. Mm-hmm. I couldn't focus, right? So public school was fine in Ottawa. And then I went to junior high, Ledbury Park Junior High in Toronto, in North York, rather. And that was the best time I had. I really established really good, you know, but that went to grade 9. And then that's my parents moved again from into closer to York Mills Collegiate. And then I had to start all over again. But again, being, you know, 16 at the time, or in thereabouts, it didn't gel with me. I went to see the guidance counselor, actually, and he suggested, well, there's this new alternative independent, what they call free school. Mm. It's like, what, you know, hippie school. And I went downtown. There was one called Magoo, which was downtown Spadina and College, I believe. But I couldn't go there because it was out of my district. I would have to move to downtown Toronto. And then the other one was AISP, Alternative Independent Study Program. So that was great, and that was almost like being in a college or a university. You're left to your own devices. There wasn't a principal, there was a coordinator, mm-hmm. and we had the same funding as a regular high school, but for maybe 150 students. So we had, and that's actually where I met a Port Hopian, Melanie Brown. She's an artist, and we both attended the same school at the same time. But so we had, when we had all-day art Friday, we actually could afford a model to come in and do live drawing.
Right.
Pottery, we had all the equipment. I took electronic music. And, of course, there was history, and there's other, you know, serious, you know, the norm courses that you could take, right? But at that time, I got involved At the same time, I got involved with young people's theater because that's my first love was theater. So when parents are trying to think of things for your kid to do, young people's theater had advertised down at the O'Keefe Center at that time was improvisational acting lessons. So at the age of 14, I went down and did that every weekend. But I became friends with the people who ran it, which was this group called Homemade Theater, and they were an improvisational troupe. And I just what ended up happening, I just basically quit school and went to work with them. Mm-hmm. Right, I was their roadie, part-time actor, and we toured around. We actually toured to Coburg at one point back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And did a show called Ice Follies. So that was a lot of fun, and then from there, then I became, when I got a little older, about 18 or 19, my brother had was living in downtown Toronto, and he packed up everything and went to the Yukon, to Dawson City. Mm. And after a couple of years, I was very intrigued what my brother was up to, and I followed him up there. So I left and went up there for a visit and didn't leave for 6 years.
Interesting.
Yeah, I went to Dawson City and just got whatever employment they had in the summer months, and I came back a couple winters, but most of the time I was there for from 1979 to about 85.
Okay, so interesting. You what a varied experience, of course. So mm-hmm. I mean, all of this experience that you had, both in education, but both in vocation,
yeah,
traveling around, getting to understand maybe a little bit about who you were and what you wanted to do, and mm-hmm. so you probably came back at the age of around 25.
Yep.
And what then really sparked your journey
then,
there?
Well, then what happened there? Because the relationship I had with, again, the actors, now there was a troupe of four, and Barry Flatman, who's a well-known Canadian actor, not by name, but if you ever saw him, you would recognize him. Mm-hmm. And Barry is one of my best friends. He's almost like a brother, he's in the show called on CTV called Private Eye. He's a main character. But in any event, I came back and I said, you know, I didn't know what am I going to do? And he suggested, hey, Oliver, why don't you get involved with film work? I said, oh, okay, because it's up and coming in Toronto. Now it's just the beginning of Hollywood North. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, he gave me the union office, and I went down there, and I was hired on the spot.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah, it was. I was, because I had multiple driver's license, because I drove truck, and I had my A-class license, so I can drive transport and passenger vehicles, and essentially went down and started working in film, and that lasted about 10 years.
Okay.
And all through the 80s into the 90s, and that's how that's when I got married, and we started a family, etc. So, a family not in Toronto, but. After that, we decided, when I got married, just starting my career in film, and then we were thinking about children, and we had a cottage up in around Bancroft at that time. We don't have it anymore. So we'd take Highway 7 a lot to drive up to Bancroft on the weekend, and we passed through this little town called Norwood at Highway 45. And number 7, and we saw a house, an old farmhouse, and it was for sale. So next thing you know, we're driving home, and we just dropped a deposit on a house in Norwood. And
as you do,
yeah, just as we did. So we was that was the start of our journey to the country, because we wanted to start a family, and my wife was pregnant with my first daughter, Leah, at the time. And yeah, we just, from Mississauga, where we were then, we packed up everything. And my wife's a teacher. She gave up her 8 years with the Burlington Board of Education. I gave up my work with, I tried to keep up with film, but it was difficult because of the distance. You had to be in the city because mm-hmm. the hours you work, I'd be, you know, when I worked, I was up at 4 o'clock. You put up you put in 16 hours for about mm-hmm. 3 months mm-hmm. every day. So it was kind of back then, maybe not so much now, but.
It's interesting. I love that little story about it kind of felt as though you just were passing through and you looked at each other said,
well, does it seem right? In retrospect, we sort of, there are some regrets. It was during the 90s. It was the first recession, mm-hmm. and things sort of fell apart. But and that's where I got, to make a living. I got into a transport truck, and I did that for a number of years as well. Went and hit the hit with Highland Transport and XDL, and drove the big transport trucks into the States and into Montreal and Quebec and so on and so forth, and to eke out a living.
Certainly. And I guess during a lot of these periods of times, you're making major life changes, mm-hmm. Having a family, moving out of the city.
Yeah.
It's obviously a little bit more difficult to continue the employment or the career path you had in the city.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have to make ends meet and you mm-hmm. seek alternative employment.
Yeah, whatever was necessary. That was the thing. That's what I... You know, not to take a moral, not to take a high ground on it, but I did what I had to do to survive. You know.
So what was the ultimate turning point that changed after that? That maybe either led you to Port Hope or led you to a career change.
Well, I have to back up a little bit. I also, because I wanted to get out of film regardless. To back up a little bit, I wanted to get out of film and. I was looking. I went back and got my high school equivalency, because that was necessary. And I also went to Humber College and I took cabinet making, for a year. And then I came up with a cabinet. I really like to create. I wanted to work with my hands. So that's where in Norwood I set up a woodworking shop as well. And fine furniture, screen doors, chairs, all that kind of thing. And my wife went back to work. She got a job with the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board in Coburg at Brookside. So, the traveling from Norwood every day, especially in the winters, was daunting, you know, and especially when a second and third child is on the way.
Sure.
We decided to we got to sell and we got to move down to Coburg. But we ended up in Centerton instead at that time.
Okay.
I was a stay-at-home dad. I wasn't pursuing anything really. I was just working from home. My wife is the principal breadwinner, mm-hmm. Teaching. And then we ended up from Centerton. Then because of my daughter's athletics, my middle daughter, we ended up in Coburg because it was just more advantageous for us because she needed, we had to drive her to her swimming activities in the morning, mm-hmm. or twice a day. So Coburg was the best bet from there. And then Coburg for about a period of 9 years. I worked at Park and Photo. That doesn't exist anymore, mm-hmm. but I was there. I was adept at Photoshop and editing, and photo restoration, and that's when digital cameras were just coming into view, and I was very good at selling those, the new technology, mm-hmm. And I embraced that very much. And they went, Park and Photo then went under. And then I went to not very creative, but my one of my first loves also was computers.
Right.
And then I went to Mantronics Computers on not Division Street, but on, I believe, at William Street.
Right.
In Coburg. And spent about 4 years there. And then in the meantime, I was still creating. I was doing my own photography, mm-hmm. which always been a passion since the 70s. Since I could afford a camera, I got one, and I was always taking pictures. But back then it was kind of difficult because it was expensive. Mm-hmm. It's nothing that you could, you know, when you're working up in the Yukon and you have these rolls of film, you have to send it off to Whitehorse, 300 miles away, and give them a lot of money to give these slides back, right?
Certainly.
But so that was always one of my bigger passions.
Thank you very much for listening to part one of my conversation with Oliver Steins. Please check out my Facebook page, Business Insights with John Racine. Located on my Facebook page is the information about all previous shows. And there, from there, it's an easy link into Northumberland 89.7's shows and podcast section. And from there, you can listen to all previous aired episodes of Business Insights with John Racine. You can also check me out on my website, www.johnmeansbusiness.com. Please be sure to tune in next week for my concluding episode with Oliver Steins, where we're able to really dive into the business components to really Oliver's career, where over the past 11 years, he's been running Ganoraska Art and Framing, and really get into understanding the importance of creating high quality work for his clientele. I'll see you next week. My guest in studio today is Oliver Stein. Oliver owns a art and framing shop in downtown Port Hope. We kind of just walked through, your journey, where you grew up, where you went to school, the different choices that you made that has ended up in Port Hope with the store. You make the move down to Coburg from Norwood, and you spend some time, obviously, in a photography shop, getting more acquainted with how that business works. Move over to computers. So computers, obviously, now a very essential component to what you do. Mm-hmm. Spend a bit of time there. We're now in the 2000s, really. Mm-hmm. What led you from the computer shop to opening your own store?
Without sounding kind of, airy-fairy about it, but my life has been one door closes, another door opens. Sort of the universe sort of unfolds itself, right? And mm-hmm. it's always been my case, and I'm open to that. Park and Photo, it could sustain itself, so that's when I went to Mantronics, and with James Manning, who was a great guy. But because of the other box stores coming in, it couldn't sustain itself. But while I was there and managing the store, and all the time, even at Park and Photo, I was getting in retail. I was meeting people, and I'd make sure people would remember me. Right, I'm very outgoing. I'm very, I pride myself on when people come in, I make sure that we get engaged in conversation and find out what they want and what they need. And the word no is never in my vocabulary either. There's always a way we'll figure out. We'll say yes, we can. We'll do it. Within the confines of whatever we're doing. And again, still my passion was photography, and I was doing fine art photography, and submitting to Journey Through the Arts. And becoming a member and involving myself with the art community with my photography. But I needed my pictures framed. So to keep costs down, I went to Port Hope, to at that time was just called Ganoraska Art. and Kathy Adams, and she had the store at 105 Walton Street, just beside the Variety Store. So I'd bring her my work and pay for it when I could afford to. And basically what happened at Mantronic, he couldn't go any further and said, okay, that's fine. I was thinking of taking it over and just doing repairs, but that wasn't financially feasible to do. And then Kathy, because we had a good relationship going over the years, she reached out to me and said, hey, Oliver, do you know anybody who wants to buy my shop? I said, oh, why? What's going on? Well, she said, well, I want to retire with my husband, and we're going to go to New Brunswick. Oh, great. No, I said, went down to see her, and she took a look around there. It was, about 1,100 square feet and just basically framing and artwork, local artwork. And I said, and we agreed upon a price. And then I said, okay, I'll see what I can do. And I approached my wife, thank goodness for her, because I was going to go to see a friend of mine who's got a bit of coin in his pocket. I couldn't go to the bank. You know, there was like, I'm just come off the street kind of thing, right? But it wasn't that much money. It was just, you just wanted, a token amount just to get going. So basically my wife, Anita, said agreed to, we had a little bit of money set aside. She agreed to lend me, interest-free, which was great, the money to buy it and take it over. And like, again, so the one door shuts and immediately within that week, another one opened up, and I was very excited and just moved right in. But under the agreement that she stick around for at least 6 weeks or a month to help me out and just guide me through what is necessary, you know, communicating with suppliers and mm-hmm. what's involved here and showing me how to do your job. Mm-hmm. Basically, and then she agreed to that, which was great. So, and there was an employee there, Rhonda. She was, she had been there, and so she stuck with me for quite a while as well. And then that was the beginning.
So I'm very interested. There's your kind of your normal. I shouldn't say normal. There is the usual way people frame is they go buy a frame from a store or something like that, slap a picture in it, put it on the bedside table or put it in the living room or something like that.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about the more or less the art of framing and really brought you.
So, and the other thing is, like I have to mention, it's also dependent on the other retailers and other, this is where I met the framing, and then I keep telling even today, a day doesn't go by when a customer comes in specifically to do framing, and sometimes they'll bring in they're concerned when I lay out a bunch of samples for artwork that they go, well, oh, that's not going to match the couch, you know, that's not going to, oh, the cupboards are teal, you know, that said, so, no, that's respectfully. We're framing to the art, mm-hmm. right? We're trying to, because wall color can change, mm-hmm. Your furniture can change arrangement. You might not even decide to, when you take it home, to put it where you wanted to put it. Mm-hmm. So it's to enhance the piece itself, right? And you can't get that at Walmart you can get, or IKEA, you know, you get the standard. If you want, just wall art or posters, that's fine. But if you have, my clients vary from young students to affluent people and have I've been honored with, like, over the years, I've had original Andy Warhols.
Wow.
I've had, and some things were only, they wouldn't, not that they didn't trust me, but they, Group of Seven, mm-hmm. Original pieces. And I've had them only for just long enough to make measurements and get something for that piece. They would take it home only because of insurance. If something happened, that would be, they were talking about a $1 million piece of artwork, right?
Right.
So, So I've gained the confidence of a lot of people in the community to bring me really valuable pieces of art. But to get back to the trying to answer the question, yeah, it's, and I also tell people it's not something you do every day. It's like, especially in the springtime or this time of year, people run out and start buying plants, and it's enjoyable, it's great, but it doesn't last. Artwork is forever, you know, and it's something that you'll enjoy every single day. So either it be a photograph or an oil painting or a pastel, big, small, and sometimes it's nothing, it's something very personal. It's something from your child did. And it needs to be elevated or, you know, put in, like I've done pen and ink from a three-year-old. You know, but it meant something to them, and it, and it, and to display it, you know, to make it that much more, and make it an heirloom practically. So that's, you know, and that, and I get constantly, I get letters dropped in my mailbox, and you know, with thanks, you know, what a, you know, good eye I have. I just, again, just it just comes naturally.
So. A little bit about the technique. I'm intrigued by the different ways that you can frame things. So you can use, you can have a canvas.
Yeah.
You can have a degree certificate. You could have photographs or anything like that that goes inside. What decision making process do you go through when you? When you're thinking just, about materials?
Well, the customer also has that. Sometimes the customer will have their own input. I have to listen. You have to be a good listener. Some people come in, they have specific ideas of what they want. And but I'll always interject with my spin on it. And the and like today, even just before you picked me up to come down here, we were doing a, my daughter and I were doing a project, and it was basically cardboard.
Right.
A triptych of a young person who painted on pieces of cardboard. And we just said, well, okay, well, this is, we want to see the rough edges. We want to see the imperfections of it. So what we'll do is call the float. Like we don't put a matting around it. It's actually, it looks like it's like in a shadow box, basically.
Right.
That's the other thing. Like people bring me, I've framed bullets.
Right.
I've framed harmonicas, I've, you know, accordions, guitars, objects, like three, you know.
Yes.
And that's where I also have to depend on other businesses in town, like Sean from Best Woodworking, when I got a signed, autographed Pink Floyd guitar.
Right.
Right. And this was going to be a gift. So how do I mount this thing, right? So again, there's no such thing as no. We'll figure it out and get the nice kind of interesting frame. And then I went to Sean. I said, well, I need this heavy. And then he reached out to a metal worker, and we got the brackets that would hold it, it hold its weight. So, and a lot of thought goes into these things, especially as a project like that.
Certainly.
Yeah, memorabilia. Metals, that's the other thing. I get a lot, you know, I have to come up with something for this weekend as well. Customers bring in their uncle, their dad, their grandfathers, all the memorabilia from the war. And that is so important. You can't mess around with that stuff, right? So then I can also offer to restore the photographs.
Right.
So because of my computer skills and with photo editing, and I can take, I reassure them, you'll get the original back, and then we have copies. So I can clean it all up and get rid of the cracks.
Which is obviously a grave concern, because so many photographs during almost every era has different chemicals or different issues.
Yeah, they just deteriorate. Like even slides, because slides will, you know, they sit in the carousel for the last 30, 40 years. They're start to deteriorate and they lose the color. So I freshen them up. And also the family member can share them with somebody else, put it on a memory stick, and or I could print it out for them, what have you. And then that's important, again, to listen to the customer, what they the last one I did, they, you know, he's very specific what how the arrangement was going to be.
What is the most common misconception about, I don't know whether it's the investment that people are misunderstand, mm-hmm. or basically the value, or mm-hmm. is it just people unaware of the importance?
No, most people do. Now, there's some people that are just come, you know, especially young people, they come in, they have no idea.
Right? Sure.
And sometimes I said, yeah, you might want to sit down mm-hmm. before I give you the quote. Mm-hmm. But having said that, there's always a way, because unlike being in the city, and there's alternatives. There's I get, you know, not that I qualify a customer when they come in to mm-hmm. see how big their diamond ring is or anything like that, mm-hmm. but I can tell when a young person is still in school. Mm-hmm. I understand that, and I will most certainly make it affordable for them, mm-hmm. you know, but I have other customers who insist on the gold leaf, and that's what they want, that's what they'll get. Tim and Dean from Acanthus, they've brought me their customers, mm-hmm. and this is what they want, right, because they're doing the interior design. Mm-hmm. They specifically come in and we work in concert with somebody like Acanthus. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but again, there's always a way, and it's affordable. I say first we'll go for the big guns, and what looks best. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you have to spend an arm and a leg on it.
Certainly.
Okay. So and then that's too dear. And then I know you're a student, you're a young person. We'll do this instead.
Do you ever walk into a room or somebody's house or somebody's business or wherever, yeah. and in your head you go, wow, this spot would be the perfect place yeah. for either this kind of art?
No, that's funny. Not that I creep people's houses, but sometimes my wife and I go for tea, and then we drive around Port Hope, and we love the houses. We just like driving up and down. But at night, you can sort of see, mm-hmm. Sure. through the windows.
Sure.
Yeah. But our little joke is, I don't know why, but it's just maybe, yeah, it's a good spot for a grouping. Mm-hmm. But what we notice is that we tease people about is that there, not that there are any rules about hanging artwork, but it shouldn't be 2 inches from the ceiling, right?
Sure.
It's like, that's the other thing where you can drive by and go, why is it way up there?
Right.
You should put it in the line of sight, and mm-hmm. That's the only thing. Yeah, but it's hard to, you have to rely on your customer, because I'm not in your house.
Yes.
I don't see some people bring pictures. Like I have one customer, a doctor friend from in Hamilton, and she was very specific. It wasn't so much maybe for the art, it was the size. She wanted this Baroque image she sent me, mm-hmm. which I printed, because I have that ability now too, doing what they call giglée, reproduction of fine art using a digital process, which is a fancy name mm-hmm. for giglée, basically a high-end printer.
Okay.
That can print on canvas and other substrates, paper and photo paper, etc. But in any event, she just said, well, I can't be more than 3 feet high.
Right.
I need to fill this space. But this is the kind of art I want, this 17th century Baroque image, this on canvas of, this still life. And that's what I want. And that's what you're going to get. Right. But I decide on the frame. And then sometimes distance is a problem. The customer's not always there. We have to take photographs. Correspond back and forth via email or Facebook or mm-hmm. social media or what have you, and to decide and the cost, of course.
Would you find that most people don't have enough art or framed pictures in their home, or would you say?
That's you see, again, growing up, I don't know what I grew up with a father who was an artist, and there was every square inch of everything.
Sure.
Art was everywhere. Mm-hmm. But that's also with the culture, even within with the Latvian community, art was revered. The other thing with it, that when I went back to Latvia several times, and it's kind of interesting where North American culture is not like that at all.
Yes.
We went by this very old building, and my father was explaining the highest occupation is on the top floor. Then you have your doctor on the second floor, and then you have your lawyers on the first floor. Who was on the third floor but an artist? That was the most elevated person in the community, right? That created art. But anyway, back to the framing.
But this is important, I think.
Yeah. But if somebody, I don't see,
if somebody is maybe listening to this and thinking, I don't really know anything about art, mm-hmm. or I don't really know what I should do as far as if I want to take something, and maybe it's an image that's really important to them, and maybe a family portrait, it may be something, mm-hmm. but where should somebody start more or less their discovery process through kind of making a decision what would be, you know, a great thing to frame or something that would be of interest to them? Where do you think they should really start?
That's kind of hard to answer because each customer's individual needs. A lot of things, sometimes what happens is it's a beautiful piece of art, but it's outdated. Right. That's the other, a lot of people bring me that it's just back from the parents' generation from the 50s and 60s. And they want to bring it up to modernize it. They want to get it a little bit more, you know, more contemporary. And just to that piece under that's been sitting rolled up under the bed for the last 6 years, it's time to bring it out. You know, it's time to dust it off and bring it into me to get up on the wall and enjoy it. You've had one customer, he's had, you know, a beautiful paper Japanese artist, and just incredible, like a museum quality, but he had it shoved away, you know, in under the or fabric. That's the other thing. I've had this African warrior piece that was again rolled up in newspaper, shoved away for years and didn't see the light of day. And a lot of people have that tucked away. It's time to bring it out and find a spot for it and start enjoying it, because that was the purpose of getting it in the first place, to remind you of that trip that you did in Europe or Dominican or Cuba or wherever you went.
Sure. We're just going to take another quick break, sure. And we're going to come back and actually discuss, you know, some of the insights that you've gathered over the years. Welcome back to Business Insights with John Racine. My guest, Oliver Stein. So we are kind of walking through the journey that led you to opening up Ganarasca Art and Framing, mm-hmm. and really the kind of the intricate detail of, you know, as basically as a vocation, what entails to do all of this work, and maybe some advice for some people to embrace the idea of taking out maybe that old piece or something that is dear to them and getting it up on the wall, getting it out there so that people can see it and that you can enjoy it. And I think that's a really important component.
Well, John, the other thing to convey, and also tell people that because I branched out, not just the framing, because of the printing capability too, when people come, the other thing is I have a lot of local artwork. It's not just the framing. I mean, I encourage, I'm very supportive of Northumberland County, like the artists, mm-hmm. Sue Wilkins, Judy Hopkins, all kinds of local artists, and they're just fantastic. So it's not just the framing.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose if there isn't something that you have in your possession that jumps out to you,
that's what I was going to say.
Ultimately, your store is absolutely filled with all kinds of images, all kinds of artwork that are I would say probably would resonate with a lot of local people, as you have local artists, you have global artists, but you also have a repository of an infinite amount of artwork that you can reach out from in order to produce as well.
I always joke around with customers. They come around and they don't really notice the machine or that I have this capability of printing. And I'm a limited space, you know, for all intents and purposes, framing keeps the lights on, right? And that's my primary focus. That's pretty well, you know, 80% of the business that I do. But having said that, the artwork, and also when people come about and they take a look around, I say, you know, hi, how are you? Where are you from? What's going on? What do you need? What are you looking for? And sometimes it'll be just, no, we're just, you know, kicking tires or just looking around. But 9 times out of 10, well, I said, I have to complete, or for Easter weekend even, well, I'm looking for a giraffe riding an elephant. Right? And I said, okay, that's great. Good for you. Well, I don't have that, but let's find one. Mm-hmm. Right? So if things are in the public domain, like old masters, like I can certainly get high resolution files. Or if we have to pay royalties, you know, we can, you know, purchase the file, and I'll print it for you. Mm-hmm. You just get, and they're stunned, they're amazed that they say, oh, okay. This one couple, their theme was going to be jazz, musical instruments. So just go home, get on Google, start typing in what you're wanting, what you want in the way of images, and I'll print it out for you. As long as it's legal and it's in public domain or what have you. And another woman came in the other day looking for, she wanted comedians, photographs of comedians. And that's what she's going to put in her on her wall. She's got a series of 8 that she's going to do a certain size. I said, great, we'll do that for you. We'll figure it out, right? And let you get online. And again, there's nothing not within our grasp of doing.
Certainly. So, as we normally do in this final segment, I would like to ask you, you know, through all of the experience that you've had up until this point, you have collected a bunch of different vocations, but also experiences. If Oliver could go back to Oliver at, say, age 25, coming back from the Yukon, it's not necessarily what would you do different? It was more or less, what kind of advice would you give yourself at that age, knowing what you know now?
Oh, dear. Oh, I don't. The problem with being artistic is I would have planned more for my financial future. You know, the thing is the left brain, the right brain sort of thing that's like, flying by the seat, I would say to old Oliver, I said, I would plan for down the road. It's all well and good when you're, and that's the other misconception. People think that because you're a business owner that you're rolling in the dough. You're not. It's a lot of, a lot of money that has to go certain ways and to take care of suppliers, etc. It's ebbs and flows, right? But yeah, if I would tell my younger self, I would have tucked away, you know, sort of something to take care of the sort of the boring part, you know, the financial aspect of it, to prepare for the future, the inevitability that you might want to stop doing this.
Certainly.
Right. So, but in my mind, I was gonna keep going till I was, 80,
Sure.
I joked about the fact that somebody's going to walk in and just call out my name. I'll be hunched over in the back somewhere, right? But been more financially frugal about.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I would have done differently in that respect. But I have no regrets as far as anything else goes. As far as the art, no, it's just go with the flow. Keep an open mind and just. And I don't think it would have been possible either in a big city. Like that's the other thing is a small community is just, it's just fantastic. Port Hope, in a small community for what I do and the support I get from other retailers and friends and family is incredible. Just incredible. Yeah.
So recently you've had You've had some medical news that... Yeah,
diagnosed, unfortunately, with a neurological disease called motor neuron disease, or a form of ALS. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm not going anywhere. Unfortunately, it's a long term. It's a upwards to about 3 to 5 years. It's a slow acting mm-hmm. disease, and I'm in good hands at Sunnybrook and plugging away. But keeping in mind, I have sort of, I don't want people to run away or feel too sorry for me. I have my oldest daughter, Leah, and who's been very helpful, and she's thinking of taking over, mm-hmm. and she's doing all the physical work now.
Sure.
And she's very artistic, as well as all my girls are, actually. They're all very, they all have that talent as well. Mm-hmm. And because it's different every day, and she's really enjoying it. So we're working, for the time being, we're working in concert together. Mm-hmm. She works for me 3 days a week. So, but we're getting the ducks in a row, preparing for the future. But it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to stay where it is. And if anybody else is interested too, there's a lot of outreach from other artists that want to get involved and help out.
So, it's really interesting. I think it's because it's not a common storefront offering. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing too many people having storefronts with framing and art. Mm-hmm. It's really good that you can bring in somebody that can learn from somebody mm-hmm. who's been doing it for a long time mm-hmm. and be able to produce the quality of work that's going to keep going.
Yeah, because it's very important, John, as you well know, you can't mess up in a small town, right? Mm-hmm. You have to make sure, and that's always been my mandate, regardless, and even when people, sometimes what people will do, it will just give me a piece and say, here, Oliver, do what you think is best. Mm-hmm. They trust me that much to do that, and we haven't disappointed anybody yet. And there's always that guarantee that I always want you to be happy. I don't want you to look at me sideways when we walk down the street.
Sure.
There's that guy who did, and to say that, if you're not, I said, if you don't like it, bring it back. We'll do it over at no cost. We'll make sure that you're happy, because it's something that's important to you. And we'll fix it if it's, but I haven't had that experience just in the time I've been running it. So
I want to thank you very much for spending this time with me, walking through your story. Mm. I want to encourage everybody out there that, maybe has that family heirloom, may have a piece of art, a family photo, to really consider the value of having it properly framed, as well as anybody who has a bit of an interest in art or any local artists, please visit the store. The store is located...
93 Walton Street.
On 93 Walton Street in downtown Port Hope. Oliver also, as a photographer, does headshots.
Oh, yeah.
Please come down to Ganarask Art and Framing and get your headshot. It's certainly an asset for the downtown Port Hope. Mm-hmm. I really encourage people to visit his shop. You can check me out at www.johnmeansbusiness.com, as well as on Facebook, Business Insights with John Racine. You can listen to any previous episodes at Northumberland 89.7. Just click on the shows and podcast section, click on the Business Insights link, and located there is all previous episodes, as well as you can check out Apple Podcasts for all previous show. Also, check out Oliver Stein's website located at
ganarascaartandframing.com.
Perfect.
Oh, and oliverstein's.com as well for photography.
Thank you very much. Take care.